even though you might encounter individuals that will tell you that they're busy, I, as a general contractor, I'm always on a lookout to add clients. I'm always out there because I look at clients as that proverbial bucket where you constantly have to put new leads in because there's a little hole at the bottom, people dropping off.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
What's going on, everyone? I'm Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday show. Today, we've got a guest on by the name of Van Sturgeon. Van has a great story. Grew up in Chicago, and in the 70s, his family actually bought a multifamily apartment building in the city of Chicago. When they bought it, they were able to muster enough money to get the down payment and acquire the property. And it was fully occupied when they bought it. So everything looked amazing. And then for those that aren't familiar with the 70s, there was some turmoil in the economy, some new laws that came into place that created turmoil in the city. And people were moving out of the city into the suburbs, drugs and some bad stuff were coming into the city. And what that resulted in is low occupancy. And he was telling me about occupancy dropped like 30 to 40%, right? So they were struggling to survive and make the mortgage payments on this building. And it got so bad that other landlords who owned properties in the area were actually torching their buildings to the ground so they could try to collect the insurance money. And so this was his first foray into real estate. And it's a great story because now Van owns over 1,200 doors all by himself. And he started off as a general contractor and then went into fix and flips, buy and hold. And so we get into the whole gambit of what he did. But the main premise of this show is on value add investing. And I know I've mentioned this in the past. That's what we do. We look for properties where we can come in and add value. Force appreciation by coming in with a CapEx budget where we can then renovate the property, both the exterior, interior, so we can achieve some rent benchmark, some goal of rent, where then that will push bottom line, the NOI. So then in turn, we can then go sell the building for a profit. And so what we dive into in this is Van's six steps on value add investing. And he breaks it down from the very start to the very end of a value add deal, what you should be looking for, kind of the strategies you should be implementing, and also what you should be looking out for. Because that's a big thing when it comes to value add is you can think you have the right plan in place, but if you don't implement it properly, it can blow up your entire deal. So this is a really great episode, one where you're probably going to want to listen, where you can actually take some notes and rewind, because he adds some great actionable steps on how to operate a successful value add deal. All right, well, let's just get into this one and let's introduce Van. Hey, Van, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Sean. I've been looking forward to this conversation that we're going to have.
Likewise. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us. We're just talking. You're coming from Toronto, so a little colder weather than you're used to in the winter months. So, but it's good to have you on. And yeah, if you don't mind, let's just get into your background, what you've done over your entire career and what you're doing today.
Sure. I got involved in real estate investing indirectly through my early childhood, where I was born and raised in Chicago to immigrant parents. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment. I'm a product of the 60s, so I'm a little bit older than you, most folks out there. And my parents, like immigrant parents, we lived in a one-bedroom apartment with my parents and my younger brother. And they wanted, you know, they were living the American dream, trying to save up their dollars to buy their dream home. And as time went by, they discovered that the apartment building they were living in actually had gone up for sale. And so instead of buying their dream home, they went out and put the down payment, borrowed some from friends and family, and they went ahead and purchased this apartment building. Fully occupied, wonderful place on the north side of Chicago. But unfortunately, that was in the late 70s. And during that period of time, things started to transition negatively pretty quickly. It was Jimmy Carter back then with the interest rates up at 18 some odd percent. Inflation was sky high. The economy was horrible. Employment rate was really high. It was a miserable time. And you saw that mass migration out of the city into the suburbs. So this fully occupied building all of a sudden was beginning to suffer 30, 40, 50% vacancy. And it got to the point where in my neighborhood, where there's other apartment buildings, landlords couldn't hold on. They're actually literally started torching their buildings to collect insurance money. So walking through my neighborhood, I remember, and even to this day, you can see remnants of where those fires were because those buildings are still there. It was pockmarked with these buildings that were torched. It just was a really miserable time. Drugs started to come in, prostitution, all that bad stuff. So as a family, we had to survive and we had to do everything associated with that particular building, whether it was managing it ourselves and also doing all the work from painting, plastering, roof work, you name it, we did it all as a family. We couldn't afford to hire electricians or plumbers. So we were able to get through that period of time. It was a great investment, ultimately, my parents had made. And when the time came for me to go off to a university, I graduated. And I had aspirations of being a lawyer, but I really didn't see myself being behind a desk pushing paper. And I decided to go into general contracting. I enjoyed the whole renovation process. And that's what I was born into. I enjoyed it. And so I disappointed my parents and went out, started running around Chicago, general contracting company, and was out there on the hustle trying to find work. Slowly, over a period of time, I started to accumulate business. And I kept running into these real estate investors, these guys who were out there buying and selling, flipping single family homes. And started to get more and more familiar with that. And I started to dabble in it. So 1991 was my first single family home that I purchased for 40 some odd thousand dollars. I remember spending $17,000, which is a lot of money back then. And I was able to, in about 5 months time, be able to sell at profit around $30,000. Which, Sean, back then, $30,000 was king's ransom. Back then, that was professional kind of lawyer kind of salary kind of. So me being able to do that in 5 months really opened my eyes to that. Yep. So I've been really blessed. I just continued along that process. And one thing led to another from went into property management and into restoration. I have a restoration company, home builder. So all in all, I currently right now, I've got 1,200 doors and I am semi-retired. And I'm out there talking about the things that got me successful with regards to the planning and managing aspect associated with a value add renovation to whether it's a single family home or multifamily.
That's awesome. And you just mentioned value add. So I was about to ask to scale that way, especially like doing it on your own. Usually there's a value add component to be able to scale like that. So I was wondering, one, could you just explain to the listener what value add is? And then two, how you're able to do that, if there's any process you have to complete a value add and what that is.
Sure. Generalized sense, a value for the most part means doing an actual renovation. It could also mean classification change of the actual asset. Also, it could be a change in a property management or style of property management. All of these different things are an attempt at once you've acquired a property, you're able to add tremendous value monetarily to be able to pull that equity out by doing a refinance. So typically when we talk about value add, we're talking about renovating. So we walk into, whether it's a single family home or multifamily space, we're looking at a property that is underperforming, that has issues with property management, has issues with really some significant deferred maintenance and CapEx stuff that previous regime or landlord wasn't or owner wasn't willing to do. And we've acquired this asset, should be hopefully a tremendous discount to what the market rates are. And by virtue of getting that great deal, we go in there and we roll up our sleeves and we spend more money on this asset to raise the values more than what we put into it and being able to pull that equity out on a refinance. So that's in a nutshell what a value add is.
Yep. Awesome. And then, so do you have any specific process that you kind of built and tailored to growing your portfolio?
Sure. Over the 30 years of doing this, I've literally done thousands of renovations from single family home, apartments, commercial buildings, you name it, whatever walks across in real estate I've done. And there is a process that I've developed over that period of time through these experiences. And what I have is a six-step process. And really where it starts is in establishing a clear, defined goal associated with this value add. Oftentimes, in particular in the single family home space, a lot of folks will get into renovation without a clear defined goal associated with what it is they're looking to accomplish. So I strongly encourage people that you really figure out what it is that you're looking to do with this and set that goal and actually write it down. So if you're looking to do raise rents through that multifamily, raise it from $800 to $1,200, that's a goal. Write it down. If you're looking to flip a property, what is the anticipated sale price or profit that you're looking to generate? That's a goal. Write it down. Once we've had that actually clearly defined, that is what we're going to put as our guiding light that everything associated with that value add is going to run through and is going to conform to that particular goal. So once we have that goal, we got to go out in the marketplace and validate it. So you, as a successful multifamily syndicator investor, Sean, you know what I mean. You go out there and you start to validate the things associated with what it is that you're looking to accomplish. But you really need to do that on a granular level. Sometimes when we go through that our due diligence phase and we're underwriting a particular property, we don't really get into the minutiae associated with what it is exactly we need to do to this property to raise value. So, and I get into the point where you actually go into comparable properties in the marketplace where, for example, you're looking to raise rents to $1,200. You got to go over there and take a look at what comparable properties have that your property does not. And is it even conceivable for you to actually carry forward this value add to get those rents up to that point? And a lot of folks, once a lot of stuff going on, due diligence phase, and really the focus associated with really getting down to that granular letter is kind of a miss. And I had situations where after the fact you've acquired this property, you realize that, oops, it's not that easy, that we have some struggles now. It's not that we can just throw money at this particular project because we only have limited amount of money, of course. Now we really have to be very diligent in the items that we identify that are going to deliver the highest ROI. So when we go through that validation process, we should have a real clear, defined, not only goal, but actually what are the things that we need to do to our property in order to be able to get to that point where we reach our goal. Next thing in that process, that six-step process that I have is really the monies associated. When you're going through your underwriting, you've already set aside X amount of dollars toward CapEx through value add items in that property. But what is that actual dollar amount? Because ultimately, again, as I mentioned earlier, we can really blow our brains out spending money all over the place on renovating and adding this and adding that and really going over our budget. We should buy that. We should have a dollar figure that we need to hold ourselves accountable to get us to that point and not to surpass that. So in that budget process, we identify the perhaps lines of credit, loans, cash on hand, whatever's in the kitty, we figure out what that dollar amount is because that's the limit to what we can spend. Once we have that, then we move on to a process where it's called a needs and wants list, where we go and do a physical assessment of the property, exterior, interior, and really figure out exactly what are the things that are maligned or issues associated with this property, and we put them down. And things that are associated with roof that's got a big hole, elements are coming in, a pothole in a driveway, those are classified as need items that have to be addressed. But then there's other items that blue, sky blue, 4x4 ceramic tile that's in a bathroom that we hate the color, but it's still functional. Those are things that we would put under the wants category. And only do we address those items under the wants category is if there's monies in the budget. And then even we have that list, we sort of categorize those items on the wants of which ones are more important or that give us to provide us the highest ROI. And those are the ones that we actually go into and we address. And so, Sean, once we are able to get that figure, that list, we're really then in a position to be able to move to the next important critical phase, which is creating a detailed scope of work. And that is an actual physical document that clearly identifies exactly what it is that we're looking to do in this value add process, whether it's a renovation. You know, typically it's a renovation. We need to go through that process and clearly identify what it is that we're looking to do. Not only the specifications of the color of paint, the type of paint, the paint manufacturer, also even the processes associated with that. I strongly encourage you, and I'm speaking as a general contractor who has done a lot of these things. On the commercial side of the business, it is very, very rare that we ever come across a renovation project that is of some merit that does not have a detailed scope of work. On the single family home side, almost never you come across that. And that's the reason why there's so many difficulties and problems associated with contractors. I know, you know, a lot of gray area, getting quotes all over the place. And that's the reason why we have so much animosity, so many things that are going wrong in these projects, these renovation projects, is because there isn't a detailed scope of work. So I strongly encourage all you listeners out there, who wants to get into that real estate investment space, that is one of the things that you should be doing is creating that detailed scope of work so there isn't any gray area or ambiguity associated with what it is that you're looking to accomplish in that renovation or that value add that you're looking to on that asset of yours. Does that make any sense, Sean?
No, that makes a lot of sense. And like you said, it's a big thing that a lot of people overstep and just don't even consider. We have it where our scope of work, it'll be listed like in an Excel spreadsheet. So you have what the item and task is listed down the row. And then within the column, we'll have when it is planned to happen. So we'll block it out. We'll know it's going to happen. So we're currently in February 16th as we're recording. We'll know it's going to happen from the 16th to the 21st. And then we'll track it and make sure that happens. And the next item, there'll be some overlap. And that's how we kind of manage the construction side of value add. So we know what we need to do based off of what you mentioned before, our goal. We want to get the NOI to this based on raising rents to that. Well, we need to do this, this, and this based on comps during our due diligence, where we drove comps and made sure we can actually achieve those rents. And another point I wanted to add on that is too, is you should leverage your property management company. If you have a third party property management company, leverage their knowledge, their data. If they have other properties in the market, can you actually obtain these rents by doing this type of value add? Because if they say no, then there's kind of no point to investing all this money if you can't achieve that. But I agree with you 100% and just wanted to add that in there.
Sure. Like, I strongly encourage, you know, folks that I've engaged with where I've helped them through that whole process of renovating or creating that value add plan. Maybe you can get to the point where you have that comfort level with a property manager, or you've got some experiences under your belt that you can defer and get that information perhaps off of, do some research on the internet or through conversations with a property manager. If you are entering that process for the first time, entering that multifamily space in particular, I strongly encourage all folks, and I encourage the people I work with, to go out there and actually visit these properties, because there's only so much you can glean from a property manager. There's only so much you can glean off a computer. You know, you want to go to renter.com or whatever those websites are. You got to go out there physically, look at properties that are comparable to yours, and really get a sense, the smells, the sights, the amenities that are being offered. And once you have that, you're in a much better position then when you do decide what course of action, that you can make some really intelligent decisions. Because often in my engagement with folks out there, and I've helped people all across North America, is that there's a failure in that process in the beginning, because you're so overwhelmed with the other stuff associated with this asset. Like, it's a different, everything is 10x when you move up from single family into multifamily.
Right.
And there's a lot of stuff that you got to go through. And it's not for the faint of heart. Like, you're dealing with typically dealing with individuals that you're not dealing with only your money, but you're dealing with investors' money. And so there's something holy, or I forgot what the word is, but there's a level of trust there and you don't want to violate, right? So as part of that, you got to make sure that the steps that you're going to take in the planning side of the business is that you're making the right steps because you can really blow your budget if you start aimlessly spending money all over the place. And it's very easy to do. It's a slippery slope.
Yep.
Once you have that scope of work created, then you enter the next phase, next step in my process. And that's really the tender phase. So when you go out there and you've identified good quality contractors that you will take this detailed scope of work and you'll tender it out, meaning you'll send it to them. One of the complaints I've discovered out there right across North America is that the struggle of finding good people, good contractors in this overheated real estate market now, it seems that good people, they're difficult either to find, or if you do find them, they're busy. They're busy 6 months, a year out.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking as a general contractor, pretty successful one at that. Even though you might encounter individuals that will tell you that they're busy, I, as a general contractor, I'm always on a lookout to add clients.
Right.
I'm always out there because I look at clients as that proverbial bucket where you constantly have to put new leads in because there's a little hole at the bottom, people dropping off. And so as clients, you're always looking out to be able to create new relationships to add to that bucket to keep your business growing and successful. And so even though I might be very busy, I still have a lookout for individuals that have something of an interest. And so my time is extremely valuable. And whenever there's somebody who reaches out to me and says, hey, can you price out this particular project? I want to see if these individuals are professional and they have their stuff in order. And so part of this whole process of creating that detailed scope of work, it really clearly defines you in the eyes of that general contractor who's a good quality company and they're doing great work. You elevate your game in comparison to others who will reach out to them and say, hey, I want you to do some work. Because oftentimes I find, and there's lots of you folks out there listening to this podcast, who want to defer to a general contractor to create the scope of work. And it's like allowing the wolves into the hen house. Trust me, you don't want me to create your scope of work for you.
Right.
Because I will skedaddle you. I will do what I got to do. And I will make sure that I make lots of money off of you.
Right.
What you should be doing is you should be creating it on your own. And you need to identify those contractors out there in the marketplace through referrals, through your power team of network of individuals that you have, that you've got relationships with. Once you have a pool of good contractors, then you reach out to them and you provide that detailed scope of work. And it's amazing when you go through that process that all of a sudden this whole issue of looking for contractors or they don't reply to you, all of a sudden the game changes and you have people who are really genuinely interested in working with you because you come across as a professional. I, as a general contractor, don't make money sitting on one project, milking it to death. I make money, and I'm very good at what I do, by multiple turnovers of projects during the course of a period of time. So I'm looking to get in, get my money, get the work done. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm not sitting there. And I don't want to sit there holding hands of real estate investor, syndicate, or whatever, trying to figure out what they're looking to accomplish with their particular renovation. Obviously, there's always going to be problems and issues that are going to come about. That's just the nature of the beast. But I want to deal with individuals that got the planning side figured out from the get-go. And it goes a long way when you do create that detailed scope of work that not only do you protect what it is that you're looking to accomplish, but you give a clear indication to your general contractor or contractors or tradespeople, whoever you're going to be working with, that you know that everything is figured out. And they just go in there, get their job done, get paid, and move on.
That's a great point. Especially the first point you made of like, we should be creating our own scope of work, right? And not letting the contractor do it. Because like you said, yeah, they're going to one, do what they think is correct, and two, also what is correct for their wallet. So I think that's a very smart way of putting it and making it work out.
One of the common things that I get from real estate investors is that they will have a problem. It could be in the multifamily space. It could be a single family home. It could be commercial property. It doesn't matter. You have a problem. We are not experts like I am because that's my business. But for folks that are just real estate investors, they don't know. They just know that they have a problem. So you call in one contractor. Contractor will give you a series of steps in order to get you to your end goal. Another contractor will give you a different, totally different series of steps to get to the same goal. So now, how do you make that decision, which course of action you should take? And there's so many situations that I've come across with engagements with people. One contractor says one thing, another contractor says another, and both of them are completely wrong because I step in and say, wait a minute, neither one of these guys are right. You don't have to do anything.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, we GCs, we're looking to make money.
Right. Just like everybody else.
It's the name of the game is to make money. So I got to a point where I could walk into any era of building. There's some certain common themes or issues associated with buildings that are built in the 50s and the 80s and 20s. And so once you have that level of experience, you really have an understanding what are the things you should be looking out for and preparing yourself for when you're going in and doing a renovation or value add.
Do you have any tips on how to interview or pick a GC for someone who's new, maybe new to investing or maybe new to a new market?
It starts with, I'm hoping that you have acquired a great deal. And typically a great deal does not involve finding it through MLS or Zillow or something on a LoopNet. Identify a property through relationships you've created, whether it's through a pocket listing from a real estate agent, from a wholesaler, from a mortgage broker. There's a whack full of people that you should have relationships in that particular market that you're looking to do business in. And from those individuals, you should also be able to glean contractors that they've heard of or they have used that are good quality people. That's the first place that I would start. Mm-hmm. The next level, outer level out, just like how that tree has a ring, the next level out would be, hey, there's Real Estate Investment Association, these RIAs, there's these masterminds, there's these meetup groups where you've got some really beautiful real estate investors who are active in their marketplaces. And typically those individuals will say, hey, you know what? If you reach out to them, hey, I'm looking for a contractor, they'll give you some people that they have some relationships with that they can refer you to. And then the next level out of that, in a tree ring, would be these types of groups like the Facebook groups that have put a word out there that you're looking for a particular individual. You should get a whole whack full of them spit out, like in terms of people that are active in the marketplace that you can do business with. Now, these real estate guru types will say, go to your local home improvement center and sit out there at 6 o'clock in the morning. Just wait there with your notepad, start writing numbers down, the names down. And I'm thinking in my head, are you okay in the head? Like for me, me as a general contractor, 6 a.m. in the morning, I don't have time to talk to anybody in there because I got guys waiting for me at a job site.
Right.
I'm in there bragging myself and I'm out of there. That is the wrong place to be doing that. You don't find good people at your local home improvement, Home Depot, Lowe's kind of place. No. You get quality people from references. And then once you have that list, you still have to do your due diligence. You still got to, once you narrow it down, you tender it out, let's say to 4, 5, 6 people, contractors, you get quotes back. You should then narrow it down to 2. Once you've narrowed down to 2, and the amazing thing is if you've done your work properly and you've identified the right people, all the quotes will come in around the same mark. There won't be quotes from 20,000, 80,000. If you have those types of quotes, then either you got the wrong contractor bidding on it or your scope of work is not detailed enough. But once you've identified, then you go to those two individuals and you actually ask for reference. You say, hey, what jobs are you working on right now? And you go visit them. You try to find the principals. You find out what's the relationship there? Has this guy been punctual? Has he gone in there, done his job properly? And you also need to see the quality because quality is subjective. What's quality to me might be horse dew to you.
Right.
So you really need to go there and really take out a physical, get an assessment of what it is. Once you have an established relationship, you have an understanding in the marketplace, you don't have to go to that extent every time you do a renovation. But when you go into a new market and you're trying to figure it out, you got to do that extra work. Don't be lazy.
Yep.
Now, oftentimes I find investors are multifamily investors or even single family homes are lazy. They make that extra effort to go visit previous jobs or current jobs, and they just decide to hire a guy. And that could be detrimental. I've seen it happen so many times. That's the reason why, Sean, you'll drive through neighborhoods, you'll see big old garbage bins, and then you drive back 8, 9 months later, the garbage bins are still out there on that at the particular project. And it's the reason why there's problems.
Yeah.
And oftentimes the problems are associated with a lack of understanding what the scope of work is, and because it's not detailed enough and is being taken advantage of either by the contractor, but there's also situations where there's that mission creep, they call it, where all of a sudden your intentions are just to paint a wall, but then all of a sudden, no, I don't want just to paint the wall. I want you to plaster the wall, and I want you to fix that hole, and I want you to fix that trim work. And all of a sudden it expands.
Yep.
And so a contractor look at that and say, wait a minute here, but that's not what we agreed upon. And there you have problems.
Right. It's important to listeners to do your due diligence on all aspects of this, from one, finding the GC, and then 2, from the scope of work, right? It needs to be very detailed from the jump. 1, to get an accurate appraisal of what the cost is going to be, accurate quote. And then 2, also, just like Van was mentioning, so you're not jumping all over the place and running into any issues.
And so really at the end of the day, if you follow these steps, you should have identified one contractor that is not only quality, but is going to provide you with everything that you're looking for and is priced competitively. And it should be within your budget that you've already established right from the get-go through this process. And then the last piece of business is really the actual execution of the actual just renovation is value add that you've initiated. And again, it can be single family home, it can be multifamily asset. And one of the difficulties that I have encountered with my engagement with folks is that there's this issue of how much money should be given as a deposit to a contractor for them to start and for them to finish the work. And I've heard people say that they give out deposits of 30%, 50%. I've even heard people give 70% deposits upfront before one even morsel of items have been ordered or even the guy or girl showing up to the actual job site.
Wow.
And but me just by saying that, I'm hoping that a lot of folks, you listening out there, some of you have done it, that's a wrong way to start a relationship with a general contractor or with a tradesperson. You cannot give up a huge dollar amount up front before any work has been rendered. The only place that you can get that expectation exists is if you go to McDonald's and you pay up front before you get your hamburgers.
Right.
But none of these guys are McDonald's.
Right.
So by virtue of you handing over that type of a deposit, you are literally giving the keys to your project in the hands of the contractor, and they can play games with you throughout that whole process. Sometimes they'll show up, sometimes they won't, because, hey, you already got their money. They don't like being yelled at and screamed at, but they got other projects that they're working on, and those other projects that haven't paid them, they're going to be there
right
to complete. But your project, because they already got their money, they won't. So one of the things that I stress in that contract phase, when you're getting down to the brass tacks, is to establish a clear progress schedule and payment schedule. So if this project duration is going to be 12 weeks, what are the expectations every 2 weeks of work that should be completed? And then you attach a payment schedule associated with that, so that after 2 weeks, this is what the things that we're going to accomplish. Wonderful. You've accomplished them all. Here's more money. And then they continue on. And you don't get into a situation where you keep paying money and work hasn't being done.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
And that's where a lot of the difficulties associated with these renovations, these horror stories, and there's TV shows that are dedicated to these types of things. Is reasonable for that is because of you've lost control. The only thing that controls your project is money. It's not your good looks. It's not being a nice guy. Oh, it's a contractor, such a nice guy. And I'm a nice guy. And everybody's so nice and wonderful. Yes, in the beginning, it's all wonderful. But then 4 weeks, 8 weeks into a project where you got hard money lenders knocking on your door saying, where's my monthly payment? And then you see a market that perhaps changed better or worse. You are under the gun. And every day that goes by where there is a delay. And you can't afford to do that. And you want to move on. Like part of it, remember that thing that I touched upon earlier as a successful general contractor is moving through projects. I can't sit on one and milk it. That's how I make my money is going through multiple projects. The same thing with a real estate investor. You need to pull out your equity on a value add. You're looking to pull your equity out to be able to drop another property. Right. And you can't do that if you're stuck waiting for a renovation, a value add to run its course because a contractor decides to jerk you around. So that's why a payment schedule and a progress schedule is so important to be able to incorporate that within a contract. There's a bunch of other clauses you should be doing as well. By virtue of having that in place, that ensures that if this guy is not meeting or gal is not meeting their up their contractual expectations, then you can pull the plug on them and find yourself somebody else. Hopefully you don't ever have to get to that point. By virtue of having this progress payment schedule in place, it assures you some accountability. And you're in the driver's seat. And ultimately, if this person, this contractor is not living up to your expectations contractually, then you have the option to get them out and get and find somebody else.
Yeah, that's a great point. You kind of touched on a question I was about to ask because time is one of the biggest costs in this business, right? Is if you're not on time, it just costs you more money. So do you have any other kind of tips or strategies on how to make sure things are staying on time to meet those time benchmarks?
Well, Sean, when you have engaged with a quality contractor, they typically should be producing a Gantt chart where they will walk you through the whole process of this renovation, this value add, where they will say, okay, then week one, this is what we're doing, week three, week seven, week 12, conclusion. And that you will be able to see the progress of your schedule based on that. Oftentimes, I find real estate investors don't go to that extent. And you're dealing with contractors that don't even have that capability of providing that. And that's instinctive. We're all looking for a great deal. We're all looking for that cheap guy. We're always looking for that. Right? But the problem is that when you're dealing with individuals that don't have that skill set, then you end up with in no man's land where you're struggling to figure out when is this contractor going to finish up. As much as it's so important to find a great deal, I'm telling you that there's so many great deals that I have personally seen that blow up and turn into really bad deals just by virtue of a renovation value add that's gone wrong. Yep. It hasn't planned out properly. They got come contractors that don't know what they're doing, cost overruns, the whole gambit, identifying things that you shouldn't be renovating or being renovated. Money's being thrown out the window for no reason. And as a result, bad things happen. And so that's why it's so important to follow this series of steps to ensure that that this whole value add process comes out to be successful.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I have two final questions for you. But before I jump into that, where can people find you?
I love doing these podcasts and I'm really dedicated my time. As I mentioned in the top, like I'm semi-retired. So I'm all over social media, Instagram and Facebook. Also, I have a website, vansturgeon.com. People are more than welcome to go on there. I got a lot of content information to be able to help people out in this process. And if they want to reach out to me, they can do so through social media and through the contact page on my website. I love engaging with people. And at the very least, if you are struggling with something, you're more than welcome to reach out to me and we'll have a quick chat about what your circumstances are. And I'll guide you in the right direction.
Awesome. All right. Well, the final two questions. Number one, what type of lifestyle has real estate afforded you and why did you choose real estate?
I chose real estate because I was exposed to it at an early age. And what has real estate done for me is I'm very blessed that I have been very successful financially and I have created generational wealth for many family members moving down the road. And it's all because of real estate investing. One of the things I want to leave folks with is that if you start today, it's amazing how compound interest and leverage will work in your favor so that 10 years from now, you will see this asset, this investment that you made grow exponentially. If you look across all the world's multimillionaire billionaires, people with a lot of money, 90 some odd percent of them are involved in real estate. That gives you a really good indication of why, because of the power of appreciation, the power of leverage.
That's awesome. All right. Final question. If you had a time machine, you could go back in time and tell your younger self one thing, one piece of financial advice, maybe career advice, what would that be?
That is a really great question. And I think that I would answer it this way. Early on in my life, I got started and I was young, full of energy. And I got involved as I was growing my general contracting, got also involved in investing in real estate, doing flips and stuff like that. And I was burning a candle at both ends because of my background was a micromanager. And ultimately what ended up happening was I was sleeping on job sites because I was the only one who could do it right. I ended up sleeping on job sites. One late morning, early morning, I woke up in this cold sweat. All these things were bombarding me, you know, the guy who didn't show up and do this and the kitchen manufacturer that got delayed and all that kind of stuff. And I almost had a nervous breakdown.
Oh, man.
And even though I had all this success, I couldn't sustain it. I didn't see how I could do this. There's only so many hats that one can wear. I knew this one fellow through real estate, through a RIA group that was older than me. And he was an individual that had it all. He had a beautiful portfolio. He was fit. He was 10. He had seemed to have a care in the world. And this is an individual, I reached out to him, I told him my situation, and it was through his coaching, his mentorship. I paid a lot of money, but it was through that coaching and mentorship was able to get me through that and really establish the systems and processes that I've incorporated back then that brought me to the successes I've been able to achieve today.
Yep.
I'm a strong proponent of people out there who want to do what you and I are doing, Sean, is to go find yourself individuals on a one-on-one basis, hopefully, and really engage them. If you have to pay, that's an investment in you. You should be investing in yourself before you start making investments in real estate or anything else. Invest in yourself, and that way you'll see. It's like trying to learn how to play a guitar. This is one of the analogies I always use. If I want to learn how to play the guitar, there's lots of YouTube videos out there and books I can read, and I can sit there for a couple of years and figure out how to play a song. But wouldn't it be much easier if I hired a guitar teacher to sit right next to me, show me how to hold the thing, show me how to do chords, and if I make a mistake, be upside the head? Isn't that a much better approach? Wouldn't I be able to get to the point where I'm actually playing the guitar a lot quicker than me going to YouTube or reading books, trying to figure it out on my own?
Yep.
And that's where I strongly, if I had an opportunity to be able to go back in time 30 years ago, I would grab that young kid and would say, dude, go hire yourself somebody. They will tell you, teach you the ropes. And you avoid a lot of the nonsense. The beginning was a struggle. And a lot of folks out there that are listening to this are struggling, trying to figure it out. Because once you get started in real estate investing, if there's 10 feet people are sitting on that proverbial fence, only two will jump off that fence, so actually get involved and do it. But then when you get up to the next level up to multifamily, it's the same ratio.
Yep.
You really are 10xing your or 100xing your game when you're moving up to multifamily because everything, the stakes are so much bigger. You're dealing typically with investors' money, not your own.
Right.
And so wouldn't it be wonderful to have somebody beside you that can walk you through identifying exactly what you need to do to the property, how to hire a contractor, what the things you should be looking out for, and get you to the promised land? Or just usually a whole bunch of things that there's associated with it. If you have a seasoned veteran beside you, I think that's tremendous. So I'm a big proponent of that.
That's powerful. And I did just that too. I had a mentor. I still have a mentor. Have a few mentors. And I think that's so important because why not have someone pull you up where they are? If that's where you want to be, why try to figure that out on your own?
Sean, I spent roughly on a back of the envelope calculation, I must have spent over $250,000 on books, seminars, mentorship, one-on-one retreats, you name it, I've done it. And every single one of them, some are better than others, but every single one I've been able to draw some nugget out
right.
And incorporate it in my business. And for me to have achieved what I've achieved, I have multiple successful businesses. I've got over 1,200 doors. That's a huge accomplishment from a kid that grew up on the streets of Chicago.
Definitely.
And everybody and anybody can do it. I'm not any smarter than you or anybody else. I was able to accomplish it because I had a drive, a love for this business. And I actually went out and I made the investment in myself. And so if you want to up your game, everybody that's up in my kind of level, like you, Sean, have done that, have paid for that type of guidance, that mentorship, the coaching to be able to get us to the next level. So,
hey, I love it. Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been an awesome show. And I know the listeners are going to get a ton of value out of it. I know I did. So, Van, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, everybody. I will catch you on the next one. and make it a wonderful day.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.